welcome back, everyone.
Yeah, welcome back. Hello UX is a user-focused podcast aimed to help those pivoting into UX design.
We're here to empower designers and help those transitioning into the UX field by providing education, resources, and a platform to talk about their experiences.
Come because you're curious. Stay to be empowered.
Thank you for joining us for Season 3, Different Paths, One User Experience, Episode 2. We're bringing you UX Writing, a conversation with Andrew Ma.
We are bringing this to you as part of a request that someone suggested, and so we're very happy and very excited when we were able to interview Andrew Ma.
It was great to listen to Andrew and have a conversation with him, and I learned so much and just getting a perspective into what UX writing is.
Right. I'm there too. And I'm sure our Helotes also are in the same place we are. So it's good to be able to bring this insightful segment today.
Absolutely. We're excited to bring this to you. So strap in and take a listen. Today we have a very special guest, Ma, a UX writer. And Andrew is a self-described English nerd who cross-pollinated his literacy passions with technology and design. He had a UX design role before nestling into content design. He is currently a UX writer for American Express and is part of a mobile app design team. He is the co-founder of Campwa Designs, a design agency focused on connecting entrepreneurs, businesses with their communities.
Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here today.
Yay, we're very excited. So UX writing is a topic that was asked by our audience that they wanted to know more about. So we're very excited that you're here to talk to us about it. And with that, I would like to ask you, can you walk us through your journey into UX design and then how you ended up your focus in UX writing?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I think my path into UX design is very similar to a lot of my peers, especially people of, I guess, of my age. There wasn't a lot of design programs back in the day. So a lot of people came from a variety of different backgrounds. And I definitely can count myself in that. I graduated with a psychology degree, and I originally had aspirations to go to law school. And that didn't quite pan out because just becoming more exposed to everything, studying for LSATs, really told me that wasn't really what I was looking for. And thankfully, around that time, I was talking to my cousin who works in tech, and he said, "Hey, you love psych. I mean, you have a psych background. You've always loved technology, and you seem to have at least a decent eye for design. There's this new field that you should probably check out." And that's how I became introduced to the world of UX design. And through a mixture of doing some self-teaching from resources online and books into UX design, and even taking an extension course through UCLA, I found myself very interested in this field. And so with a lot of just perseverance, I was fortunate enough to know someone who helped me get my first job as a UX designer at a startup. And it was just incredible. I didn't realize I could get paid to do the work that I was doing. Just like thinking about the kind of research into the users and then putting those thoughts onto paper and then into digital wireframes, it just felt too good to be true. And I'm so glad that it's just skyrocketed in terms of the importance in a lot of companies. And the longer I was involved in UX design, I realized there were definitely some aspects of it that I enjoyed more than the others. And namely, the two parts that I was most interested in were in the UX research, which I attribute to my psychology background, particularly social psych, and my love for writing, which is something that has been a long-term passion of mine. I've always been a huge English nerd since middle school, at least. And I never knew if I could do anything with that, because you know, when you're in college, you're like, English, what am I gonna, I'm not gonna be writing any novels, right? So you know, how am I gonna pay the bills afterwards and not scare my parents into thinking, yeah, I'm gonna be struggling for a while. And thankfully, around the time that I was having those explorations, UX writing or content design, as I more affectionately prefer the term, became much more recognized as a need for companies. And so it was just a really good timing for me to start exploring something a little bit more specific that I wanted to work on. And at around that same time, I decided to enroll in the bachelor's program for interaction design at Santa Monica College in Los Angeles. And it's amazing, first of all, that community colleges now can give you that four-year degree at a fraction of the cost. And it reaches such a wide variety of different candidates and people in your cohort, because I was meeting people in their teens all the way into their 30s, and they came from all walks of life, which is exactly what you would expect and want for people trying to get into UX design. And for me, that was a great chance to immerse myself back in a more, you know, a classroom setting, because I feel that that was something that I really wanted for my own education, and surround myself with peers that could challenge me creatively in a way that I hadn't had before. And I was just excited to be in a classroom again. And then, of course, one semester in, pandemic, and so the rest of it was online teaching again. But we had bonded in that first semester, we persevered, and in the projects that we did together, I found myself focusing more and more on doing the content design. I would fulfill that role in whatever group projects we had. And I mean, I can't speak more highly of the program itself. They are taught by just amazing professors that have gone to or taught at Art Center in LA. They worked at big companies like Riot and JPL and whatnot. And every cohort gets partnered with two major companies to help them out with a design project for like the entire semester. So we got to work with Activision, Call of Duty stuff. And then we partnered with IDEO, which is a really large design agency up in San Francisco. And we helped them with serving like lower income students who were trying to get into, figure out a way into college and whatnot afterwards. And so by the end of the program, I knew for sure I wanted to go into content design. And so I started applying. I'd done some like volunteer work so that I could bolster my portfolio. And I was just fortunate enough to find some amazing opportunities that were willing to take a risk to even interview me. And as luck would have it, I happened to find the posting for Amex, American Express. And they were looking for somebody to join their mobile team. And after a few rounds of interviews, I really loved the people that I talked to, and thankfully they saw something in me. And it's just been an amazing, almost a year now, working with
them.
That's
awesome. That is awesome.
That's fantastic. Now, you said you prefer UX, a content designer versus UX writer. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, for a lot of companies, these names are interchangeable. But I think the reason that I prefer the term content designer is I think it puts into perspective the scope of what we do. I think that sometimes when people think of UX writing, they think of it just as people who do, you know, what we call microcopy, the little things on the screen, the words.
Right.
And I think that gives the wrong impression for some people that we're just there to fill in those little spots with just whatever words, you know, they think of us sometimes too much as copywriters. And while it's a big part of what we do, of course, but we are essentially designers that just happen to work with content as opposed to with the wireframes and the more high fidelity graphic work. And so, because my work involves me having to dig really deep into whatever research we've done, sometimes even being involved in creating like the research briefs. And especially at Amex, they are very much appreciative and understanding of UX writers working alongside the designers and the researchers. And often early and often, I would call it, where I'm going to be in the brainstorming sessions very early with them as we create plans and mock-ups and sketches in like mural boards online. And so I'm heavily involved in things like the information architecture. I can make suggestions in terms of like how, where should the logic flow be for this particular journey? And it's helpful for all of us because I get to have an overall view of end-to-end experience, and I can help them with their work as well, because sometimes we can solve for problems way before they start making like the higher fidelity things. Mm-hmm. Eliminate like screens. We can make things right. just so much more digestible. Mm-hmm. And so it's less work for them in the long run too. And we each have our expertise, and that's how a multidisciplinary team is the key to any company's success.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And also, how do you think your psychology degree informs what you do day to day?
Well, I like to think that it has provided me some extra level of empathy, just knowing this, especially since I focus more on social psychology.
Right.
And just being able to understand and appreciate all the different potential backgrounds that might, well, I don't like using the word users, but the people that I designed for.
Right.
What they might be going through. And just because, you know, when you're in it long enough, you kind of sometimes lose perspective. You're using a lot of internal terms. You're like, these things make sense to you only. Mm-hmm. And I think having that psychology background is, it's a good reminder that at the end of the day, we're focused on a human-centered approach to the design to solve whatever problems they might be facing. And I like to think that it's a good background. It's a broad enough subject that it can apply to so many different aspects of life.
Absolutely. And it gives you maybe a little more empathy, because you have that base understanding of remembering we're doing this for human beings, not to give a persona or that was mm-hmm. made up by who knows who, or just kind of that blanketed term, customers or users. That's great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Does having also this psychology background also help you in the sense of when you have to go back to stakeholders and kind of give them more of an insight of what you're finding out from your users?
Yeah, I believe so. In a lot of ways, one thing I like to always remind myself is that we're not just designing for the people who will be on the other end or on the other side of the application or the website. We have to make something that is understandable to even the people within our own teams that are on, you know, their product people or researchers or marketing. Because if the people internal to our company don't understand why we've made the decisions we've made, then we're going to face a lot of problems before we can even get to the point of shipping out to an MVP. And I think that understanding that approach makes it much easier to be able to communicate and understand where those other teams are coming from, because they come from different backgrounds. They have their own priorities and agendas. They're doing their job. And it's up to us to advocate for our users, our people that we're designing for. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we have to balance the needs of everything else, because, you know, we would not be here if it wasn't for product and business and marketing. They help to make this company run.
Right.
Without them, there's no money to create these things that, you know,
right.
the people need. So being able to understand what their priorities are and knowing how to speak to them about whatever we've come up with can be helpful to them, and really listening to the things that they're asking for. How can we find a happy middle ground that we can give something from each of our teams mm-hmm. into the heart of this project so that we can deliver something that we can all be proud of and that we can ship to a happy customer, happy user? I think that is probably the most important aspect of it all.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always finding that balance where everyone is heard, and that's kind of when the best ideas come out. There's a good flow, good communication, collaboration. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So can you walk us through your process of content design and how it's similar to the actual UX process of designing the screens and, you know, that kind of thing? How do they merge together, and where are the similarities and where are the differences?
Yeah. Like I mentioned a little bit before, sometimes, unfortunately, I get to jump into a project very early on at the beginning. And so we'll be in the meetings with design and engineers and product, and we all lay out our agendas. We get on like Confluence pages and Airtables and just figure out, what are we delivering? What are we solving for? And like figuring out, how are we going to approach this? Like, what kind of things, what kind of requirements do we need? And so there's a lot of discovery process for, you know, weeks sometimes, mm-hmm. as we try to make sure that we have everything we need before we, you know, get down into the design process. And so that's a lot of brainstorming together. So in that sense, it's very similar to UX design because I'm working alongside the designers to map out everything that we need. You know, there's just huge mirror boards, just
right.
competitors' projects. And like, what do we have? What do we have that's like either being upgraded or something that's a similar thing? Because we have to make sure that the experience is consistent throughout all the various products under our umbrella. Mm-hmm. And so it's just putting all these pieces on the table and then slowly like figuring out like, what do we value? What do we need here? How can we make sure that whatever we've created, it makes the most sense to fit whatever we're trying to solve for and that stays on brand for the company. And then from there, we tackle things with the designer. What is it going to look like? You know, how are we going to have them like go through their journey? Like we try to like anticipate the user journey throughout, even before we get to the screens.
Because absolutely.
How are they going to be wanting to solve this problem? And how can whatever we design, how can it fit into their lives so that it doesn't, you know, we don't want them to take unnecessary extra steps beyond what, you know, we have to present to them. And my designers are just some of the most talented people I know. And they create these just amazing, like they know all the various components and ways of interactions and stuff. And they put it all out there. They like make lots of different versions. And then we go through them. We figure out like, what does this make sense to them? Because this is just the fastest way to get through there. Is there information that we're forgotten to present to them? And then from there, you know, this is where my input also comes in. Like, how are we going to break up this information that makes the most sense to them? You know, that'll affect how many screens there are. How is it laid out? And then especially for a company like Amex, there are definitely a lot more things to consider in terms of liability and legal things, because
absolutely.
Banking, credit cards, these things are very sensitive, especially, you know, fintech is just, it is very complicated on that aspect. So we have to make sure that we have created things that still make us compliant with, you know, federal regulation in terms of like, they have to know these disclaimers about fees or, you know, other deadlines and whatnot. So we have to make sure that we incorporate all these things along the way, and then we gradually create things and then discuss with like weekly stand-ups with product engineers and our design managers, and we all collectively just like go along this journey together. We're constantly evolving our process, and what we try to do more now is to bring some of the other stakeholders in a little bit earlier. We try to bring some of our preliminary ideas to compliance a little bit earlier to see like, we were thinking this, what do you think of this? And then that way they can give a little bit of feedback instead of just waiting to the end.
Absolutely.
To deliver.
That,
yeah. That can be problematic sometimes because, you know, we won't have thought of everything because they right. are subject matter experts on that
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly.
So this saves everybody a lot of time, saves the company money that way so we can ship things on time. But yeah, so in that sense, it's sometimes very hard to distinguish between my role and designers. They're obviously much more visually inclined in terms of what they deliver, but we collaborate so closely where we are happy to provide insight. I will provide insight in terms of visual hierarchy and sometimes even like what it might look like. And they will, from their experience, offer their insights in terms of what maybe wording is best, how the titles might be beneficial to do it in this way. You know, it's just a mutual respect that we don't have our distinct lanes. They're just going mm-hmm. to cross. But that's the beauty of being on a team like that, because
yeah.
you just constantly learn from each other. You know, we set aside our, you know, any kind of ego, because this is just, we realize that we're all working together for the same thing at the end of the day.
Goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it should be. That sounds amazing. To experience that myself at work, and it's a great feeling, and just being able to share ideas without, you know, thinking about yourself, just thinking about what's best for who this is for in the end.
Yes, exactly.
So I had a quick question there.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as when we're talking deliverables,
mm-hmm.
am I understanding correctly? Is this kind of a shared deliverable? You and the other designers have access to the same assets. And so you're able to go in there and each one of you will focus on your area.
Yeah. So pretty much always deliverables will be the same.
Okay.
That was something that I think sometimes people misunderstand. They're like, oh, I just need, you know, maybe just an error copy. But from my end, it's definitely so much more insightful to open that design file and do my explorations in there. Because as much as I might start my first drafts on Notes or Word or whatever processor I'm using, you don't really get a full sense of context until you put it on a screen, especially on mobile where real estate is so limited.
Right.
So we have to figure like, okay, this title is going to be too long, or this body copy seemed fine on an 8.5 by 11 Word document. But like on a screen, it starts to get a little long. So we have to figure out from looking at it now, okay, how can we make this a little more succinct? Because people just want to problem solve. They want to read a lot. They just want to find out what's going on and what can I do about it. So at the end of the day, the deliverables will just, we hand them all off together because we'll be working on the same thing.
That's great.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, and I'm trying to be as Michael Scott would say from The Office, explain it to me as if I'm a 5-year-old. You know?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm afraid I might have not done that justice. But
no, that's great. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Okay, now we'll come to a break and we'll hear a word from a sponsor.
Welcome back, everyone. We'll continue our conversation with our guest, Andrew Ma.
I want to go ahead and ask about Capua Designs. Did I pronounce that correctly, Capua?
Yes, you did.
Okay, awesome. And can you talk to us, how did it get started? And is this like a passion of yours that keeps you motivated?
Yeah, I'm glad we're talking about it. So Capua Designs came out of this shared vision between me and two of my classmates in my cohort at Santa Monica College, and my dear, dear friends, Brian and Ralph. We became very close during our time together, and we worked on a number of projects together while we were students. And there's always been a sense of, you know, entrepreneur spirit that we all share. And so we just decided, you know, what if we just do something for ourselves? Like we'd still be working, you know, a more traditional full-time job. How can we exercise our creative juices elsewhere? One of the values that got instilled to us very strongly in the program was how to use design to affect change in our communities. Our professors very much believed in that, and that was something that we also took to heart. And so we focused a lot on just, sometimes it was just pet projects, but sometimes it was just volunteer things that, how can we help local or small businesses? That is the goal anyway, to help out them with their designs. How can we help them with their branding? Because like my friend Brian is particularly good at that stuff. How can we shape how companies portray themselves in such a saturated internet market nowadays to really compete? You know, there's a lot of things you got to know about how to present yourself online, SEO and whatnot. And we all have our individual expertise. And especially in the time of pandemic, having an internet presence went from something that was just a luxury for small business to being a necessity for them to just stay alive. And so that was the intention behind us founding this. The name Capua comes from a Filipino word for togetherness or community. And we felt that very much encapsulated the mission that we were embarking on when we, you know, formed this little like ragtag startup creative agency team. So the hope is that this is a way for us to be able to make an impact with the knowledge that we've gained. You know, we're fortunate to have been accepted into and graduated from such an amazing design program. And how can we help share what we know and help others?
That is awesome. And what kind of organizations? You don't need to say their name, but can you just give us an example of what kind of organization you have partnered with to be able to help, and what degree were you able to help them?
We were advising things like e-commerce. That was a skill that we really explored into, because a lot of companies now embarking on using Shopify. That's made it significantly easier for small businesses to launch their own platforms. It's already a huge difference from using Squarespace, not many years ago. So just help them understand how best to use these tools that they have, like themes. How do we arrange things? How do we want to portray ourselves? And obviously I'm there to help with like content and how best to frame themselves. We don't have like a set target in terms mm-hmm. of types of companies, mm-hmm. but I think it's definitely something more on the smaller local businesses that could use this helping.
Right, right. Well, that is awesome.
And how do they find you? Do you find them? How do you spread the word that you're out there willing to help?
We are working on how to market us better in terms of the various platforms, but we've been fortunate that there have been people that have reached out or have referred us to mm-hmm. organizations that, you know, just need a little bit help, and we just go and advise whatever we can, build our portfolio and just gain our experiences. You know, it's been obviously a lot of learning experiences as we go along the way, but we find everything to be such powerful and enlightening part of our own discoveries about what challenges we face next and how we will be more prepared for every other project that comes after. So
that's fantastic. And do you think that informs what you do with Amex?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think every experience is valuable experience, and it's even very different in terms of helping a very large company to these smaller companies. But at the end of the day, the customers on the other end are all still the same people. And so just being able to understand on the larger and smaller scale, I think it helps me figure out like, how can we best put ourselves in the mindsets of these customers? So there's just a lot of things that we definitely learn from working across different kinds of like clients.
That's awesome. I've asked a lot of my friends, you know, as I was coming through this process of getting into UX, what kind of advice would you give someone going into UX writing, content design?
I would say just there's a lot of reading out there, especially if you're going to be doing writing. Definitely the more you read, the more it's going to impact what you can deliver. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of resources out there. For example, a book that I particularly enjoy is called Content Design by Sarah Richards. I thought that was a very helpful book in terms of laying out a lot of different scenarios and just kind of illuminating like some of the day-to-day work and just mental processes involved in content design. Mm-hmm. I would say when I was starting out, there was also this blog called Prose Kiln that was founded by someone that I was fortunate enough to get to know better, Melanie Siebert. She's currently, you know, at Indeed. She's been very inspirational and just like very forward thinking in terms of how she views content and its role. I think she came from, I think, a content strategy kind of background. Okay. I think that's also something that is worth digging a little bit into mm-hmm. if you want to get into content design, because there's just so much depth in terms of like figuring out, understanding how all these pieces work together. I find there's definitely a lot of my peers across a lot of other companies that come from this background. They come from content strategy backgrounds or copywriting backgrounds. Not to say that you can't come in from another field, because that's the beauty of UX, but definitely just having that drive to self-educate yourself is, I think, probably the most essential. I think that a lot of people also do, I think it's called Daily UX Writing Challenge. I think it's maybe 15 days. And that focuses more on microcopy, where they present you a daily scenario, and then you try to come up with something within whatever character confines that they present. There's a whole Facebook group as well, where you can join and you can share your designs and you get feedback from other people who are going through the same thing as you are. I felt that was a good community to, you know, kind of just test the waters and try to hear from other people, whether or not they were working in that field already. I think you just want feedback from everyone to see what really sticks to people. What is the tone that's coming across? I think that is such a great way to just start honing your skills in terms of how you can present yourself in a very small amount, because especially since I think it focuses more on mobile writing.
Okay.
I think that is definitely something that is probably part of the most challenging part, being able to do it in such a small screen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, you mentioned that you find that some of the most successful come from a strategy background. Do you think any other roles, previous backgrounds, kind of lean themselves more towards the people who will be successful in writing, or it doesn't matter, come one, come all?
I wouldn't say there's necessarily any particular role go into it that is more likely to succeed. I guess the only reason strategy might be have a little edge is because they might already be doing some of the work anyway, in the same vein that when UX design was becoming much more prevalent 5-6 years ago, these were people who maybe came from business or graphic design, and they were already doing this work without the title. So it just was a natural shift. I mean, a lot of my peers are also from like copywriting backgrounds, and they were doing things in like the news space or like other social media and whatnot. So they were already crafting with content. It was just a matter of like redirecting it for this specific purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to educate in terms of, we're not just like writing like obviously not long form anymore, you know,
because right.
Sometimes that's what copywriting was for. Or if they were doing like marketing copy, you know, that had a particular guideline in terms of you're trying to sell them on something, you know, which is, you know, it's still fun. And for some companies it works really well if that's what your brand is trying to go for. So
right.
That's going to affect how you interact with the user. But I would say the biggest shift would be content design is more about having a conversation with the people you're designing for. It's no longer just writing it and then just basically shouting it out to an audience. Now you're trying to create this interaction between them, this dialogue. I think that's part of what's beautiful about it, because it is just a constantly evolving process. It's very iterative. So you're always, as writers, we always struggle with like, oh, this is, I can always write this better, and just write draft after draft after draft, and then just never being satisfied. We learn to not think that way. You get to a point, does it get your goal across? And then you test it with the people. And I think that's probably the biggest change. You actually put it in front of a live audience, and users will react to it one way or the other. And that's how you'll know if you're doing it right. I think that's just a big part of it. I think people who have come to me asking about my experiences, they're interested in how they might help themselves become much more competitive. Particularly with like making portfolios and whatnot.
Right.
You know, if you didn't come from a UX design background, I think it's not essential, but I think it is definitely very beneficial for them to just to go and dive a little bit into the UX design process. You know, whether that's Google has a free trial, you know, for the UX design, or any number of books or resources out there, Medium articles about it. Just being familiar with the way the design process works will make a world of difference in terms of preparing them for the day-to-day work and being able to shape their portfolio and their writing samples to help the recruiters and the hiring managers and future teammates to understand that you understand how you're going to fit in terms of what role you'll be playing with us. You know, it's because it's much more than just about the writing. You having that fundamental background of knowing just all these little like intricacies of the design process just makes you a much more competitive candidate, because you'll be hitting the ground running. So, and you'll feel much more comfortable in that kind of setting.
Absolutely. And I also love that you said that it's a dialogue, because our customers always interacting with our products. So mm-hmm. it is a conversation. I never really thought about that way, mm-hmm. but it is a dialogue back and forth. And, you know, the way we get feedback from them that informs our next decisions. What are we going to say next? So mm-hmm. I really enjoy that.
Yeah. And thank you for following up on, that was going to be one of my questions. How does someone highlight this in their portfolio? Mm-hmm. And so thank you for covering that, because I know that would be important for me to be able to demonstrate to others that I can do this. Awesome. So we're now at the fun part of our interview, where we're going to give you a fun question. And
this is
so
all
that
fun.
Could,
not to segregate these things.
Silly.
No more business.
We're going to get a little silly.
A silly question.
Okay.
And this is just to give our hellodies a feel for your personality. And so our fun question is, if your favorite color had a smell, what would it be?
And don't tell us the color.
Yeah.
Oh, are you guessing the color?
Yes. Well, I would like to guess the color.
Okay. Ooh. My favorite color had a smell. What would it be? I don't know how many people can relate to this, but I don't even know if this would even lead you to the color, but definitely one of my favorite smells would be when you open like a fresh new book or like a new board game. It's that smell of like fresh paper. It's just, there's something about it that's just, maybe it's a childhood thing when you're like opening a new like toy or something. I was a very a bookworm, so like a new hardcover or paperback, it has that kind of like smell. I don't know how you're gonna guess.
I don't know how I'm gonna guess that color. I worked at a library when I was in high school, so mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're talking about. Just not just the new books, but the older books and the stacks. Oh my God, I love that.
Angelina.
Okay,
hold on. You shout yours, not shout it, but you say yours and I'll say mine. Let's see.
Okay.
But at the same time, that way we'll see if we came upon in our own conclusions. One, two, three.
Brown.
Yellow.
That was close.
I mean, I feel like I've misled you, because I've set this mental picture of like books and libraries, you know, all of this. Those are colors that I associate with them as well. But unfortunately, my favorite color is it's purple. So there's no way that those paper would have led to that.
Made imagination. I always think of purple as imagination.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why.
I think it's just, purple's just an amazing color. It's something that I came to late in life, and it sounds really silly to talk about it like that, as if it's some sort of hobby or like.
Came to purple late in life.
Yeah. You know, you had like, in high school, you wanted to fit in more, so you wore the same colors, black, gray, like more neutral colors, and then just somewhere down the line, I just was like, purple looks great. Like, then there's so many different variations along that spectrum, like maroon and burgundy, and I mean, no, crimson's not one, but just like, it's just more fascinating. So that has nothing to do with anything. It's just it's just a great color.
For that.
So
Well, that answers my second question. I was gonna follow up with if it could make a sound hitting a wall,
mm-hmm.
what would it be? But a book hitting the wall, you know, that's a pretty distinctive sound.
Oh, that's a sad sound. That means like,
I know, that's terrible.
Frustrated, tired of reading these thousands of pages. I'm just
not necessarily, or you could just be so engrossed in it, you're like mad at what's happening. You like throw it and then you're like, back to it. Like, you just get so passionate about it.
Okay.
That could be it too. Andrew, thank you so much for coming to Hello UX Podcast. We really appreciate having you and being able to let a Hellodies distinguish a UX writer does in the role of UX design. We really appreciate it. We know it's something that they ask for.
I hope so, yeah. I always love talking about the work that I do. I'm so fortunate to be able to do what I do, and I feel that every person that I've met in my field has, just, it feels like finding people like me, the community, you know, it's just being able to write, even if it's just messages on Slack, that's, you know, mm-hmm. just the sheer wit that they have and the affinity for puns and whatnot. Like, we're just English dorks together, and it's delightful.
I love it.
I encourage anybody who's, you know, considering it to, you know, explore it and see if, like, maybe this is something you want to try doing. So
nice.
Fantastic. Well, Andrew, could you tell us where our Helloters could find you on the socials?
I'm not super big on socials, but if they are curious about learning more, if they have questions, they can find me on LinkedIn. Just send a message, tell me, you know, where you're coming from, and, you know, I'd be happy to, you know, answer the questions, you know.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This has been fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Angelina, I was so glad to have Andrew Ma talk to us about UX writing. I felt like there were so many things that I learned myself about it. Before speaking with him, I wasn't so sure how UX writing kind of worked into the whole UX process. And it was very helpful for him to be able to kind of point out how a UX writer comes along and helps to make a better user experience.
Yeah, and it was also great to learn how similar the process is and how involved everyone gets with each other. It's just, it's a great collaborative environment, and just learning that, you know, I liked his take on its content design, not just UX writing, because it encompasses so many more things and it's more holistic. And I also love that he has a psychology background. So it shows that anyone can come and do this kind of work. Your background enriches what you're doing today. So it's a great thing, an encouraging thing to hear that it doesn't really matter what kind of background you have. It will inform what you're doing, because everything that you're doing moving forward, just like in life, it applies to your career. So I thought that was amazing. Absolutely.
And I guess added bonus was that he is self-proclaimed English nerd. So I'm sure that falls into wanting to know more about language. And I feel the whole experience is that you put yourself out there and that you just try it.
Exactly. And there's, like he mentioned, there's so many resources out there that are free that you can just start getting into. Content design, content strategists, even, like he mentioned, that is helpful. So kind of knowing a little bit of all those disciplines will help you build a career out of this.
Right. So Helloties, just go out there and find the resources and just start doing it. Well, this wraps up episode 2 of season 3. Different paths, one user experience. Well, we'll bring in different experts from various roles that contribute to the user experience.
Before we leave you, we would like to invite you to like us and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our YouTube channel and don't forget to subscribe. Lastly, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, available on all major streaming platforms.
If you would like for us to cover a specific topic or you're just dying to give us feedback, send us a message via our social media channels or send us an email to info@hellox.design. I'll repeat, info@hellox.design.
Hey, do you like what you hear? Then show us some love by becoming a sustainer. Simply go to anchor.fm/hellox and click on the support button. This will allow us to continue to bring you great content that you're looking for, and treat us to a cafecito and receive a special shout out on a future episode. Woo-hoo!
And now a shout out to our sponsor, Overflow Digital. Overflow Digital, a digital agency specializing in all your professional website needs. We aim to create dynamic websites that will positively impact your business, meeting you at the crossroads of data, design, marcom, and UX. Before we leave, we would like to leave you with this quote. Our doubts are traitors and make us lose the good we oft might win by fearing to attempt, by William Shakespeare. I hope this speaks into those of you that are looking to the path of becoming UX writers, and you felt very inspired by Andrew Ma and what he had to share about UX writing.
Well, thank you, Helloties, for joining us. This has been Angelina.
And Jasmine.
Hasta la próxima.